Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Good morning. Welcome to Mondays with Ryan. That's Ryan G. Hensley. I'm Grant L. Cohn. One more week until the draft starts, and it's still Brandon Ayuk time. It seems like if he's on the team after the draft is over, we won't be talking about him very much. We'll assume that he's going to be on this team next year, but we're not there yet. And over the weekend, there was some interesting news. A report that Brandon Ayuk had requested a trade, and then his agent said that the sources weren't good, and then, okay, fine. But then Devontae Smith signed for like $25 million a year, which probably really ruined the 49ers Monday morning. What do you think?
A lot. There's a lot there, man. Honestly, I can't wait until the draft for multiple reasons, right? There'll be a lot more to talk about in regards to the draft picks, and there'll be less Brandon Ayuk talk. There'll still be talk because he's probably going to hold out, and they probably won't sign him until July or August. So we'll still be talking about that. But at least we know he'll be with the 49ers. And it sounds like from people I've talked to that the 49ers don't plan on trading Brandon Ayuk. It's a possibility. Anything's possible. I really don't care what the agent says. There's a reason that Brandon Ayuk unfollowed the 49ers on social media, right? So they could say he didn't request a trade, and maybe he didn't. But he unfollowed the 49ers on social media. He's obviously not happy with what's going on. So is it out of the realm that he wants to be traded, whether he made an official request or not? No, I don't think it is. I think really, though, what Brandon Ayuk wants is just to get paid. And I think this Devontae Smith kind of sets the bar for Brandon Ayuk. You know, 3 years, $75 million, $51 million guaranteed. I think that means Brandon Ayuk's probably going to get closer to like 3 years, $80 million, 26.6 per year, $55 million guaranteed. That's kind of my guess. Mm-hmm. But what do you think about all of this?
Well, I'm not good at projecting what he's going to get. But I do think it's kind of interesting just sort of like comparing the two scenarios, Devontae Smith and Brandon Ayuk. Like, Devontae Smith wasn't even in the same draft as Ayuk. He was drafted a year later, 2021, and he just got an extension. So smart. The Eagles didn't mess around. They're like, oh, you're eligible for an extension. Let's give you that right now. We're not going to wait until fourth year, fifth year, July, training camp, like sweat it. Like, no, we like you. Let's just get this over with before Ayuk gets paid and Ja'Marr Chase gets paid. And I think that's really clever and smart. Not even clever, like sensible.
Common sensical.
Yeah. And the Niners are over here playing games, and I don't know what they're going to get out of it. He's just going to get more expensive and more expensive, and I doubt they saw this coming.
Yeah, man, it makes sense. Do it early. I've been saying it for 2 years about Brandon Ayuk. If you know he's that guy, and you know he's that guy, like anyone can tell that he's that guy. He's the kind of player you want. He's DeForest Buckner, who, by the way, just got a two-year extension, $26 million per. And the Colt said he's the idea of what you want from a Colt. Niners should have kept him, but I'll digress on that later. When you know you got a guy that you want to keep long-term, and the 49ers obviously should have known that with Brandon Ayuk, they should have took care of it earlier. And even now, like, right, we're in this situation where they can do it now. But they're going to wait until July, August, and who else is going to set the bar? Is Lamb going to set the bar higher? And it never made sense to me why the 49ers approach it this way. It still doesn't. I still haven't got a really good explanation as to why they do it this way.
Okay, I agree. I don't really understand. Maybe they think it helps them. I want to rephrase the Ayuk discussion for a minute, because when we talk about it, it's like, well, why are the 49ers dragging their feet? What is the hesitancy here? Shouldn't they be eager to get this done? What if it's not about them? What if it's about Ayuk? What if Ayuk just isn't eager to sign with this team? What if Ayuk didn't want to get drafted to this team? What if Ayuk is still harboring grudges and resentments from being in the quote-unquote doghouse for half a season when he was in his second year? I mean, that cost him money. They affected his reputation and the way they looked at him. And you know, he had to really fight back by being the best blocking tight end. You know, I mean, wide receiver. Like, he had to do all the little things really well to dispel those, that perception. But it was there, and the Niners created it. He's last year, he said, you know, I'm the fourth option on a run first team. Like, woe is me.
Yeah.
Does he want to be on this run first team? He was drafted three spots after Justin Jefferson. Justin Jefferson has like 100, like 200 more targets in his career than Brandon Ayuk. They play about the same amount of games. Yeah. Is Justin Jefferson that much better than Brandon Ayuk? I mean, I don't think Ayuk thinks so. I think he feels that if he were on an offense and got that type of a commitment from the quarterback and the play caller, that he could put up Justin Jefferson-esque numbers and get Justin Jefferson-esque money. So there could be a whole lot of reasons why Ayuk is the one being like, you know what? I don't want to play for this coach. I don't want to play in the system. I don't want to be in the city. I want to go. Now, he doesn't have leverage, but that could be his feeling. That he could be the one really dragging his feet.
It's possible. I don't think it is. What I think it is the 49ers always lowball dudes from the get, right? They're not, they don't get serious about your contract until later on. So right. They probably send them, everything I've heard, everything I've read, it sounds like the Niners are like $23 million-ish.
Sure. Right?
And Ayuk wants more to 27.
Like below Debo.
Below yeah. Debo. And Ayuk yeah. wants closer to 27, 28. And yeah. you saw what just happened with Devontae. So Ayuk's probably more accurate with what he deserves than the Niners are. So I really think it's just about money. I think Brandon Ayuk would come back here, no problem, if you paid him the right way. If the Niners went up to him this last month and said, hey, we'll give you 3 years, $27 million, guaranteed 55. Brandon Ayuk's probably signed already, and we're not even talking about this. But I don't think the Niners operate that way. They yeah, lowball him.
That's true. I mean, like, if they're going to do this as like a long, drawn-out negotiation where Ayuk wants 27 and they're going to offer 23 and ultimately meet at 25, I mean, yeah. damn. The Eagles and Devontae Smith just got $25 million a year done right now.
Right.
And I don't think many people would say that Devontae Smith is better.
Nobody would say that. Who would say that?
No one.
Eagles
he doesn't
fans,
have
maybe.
The talent. He doesn't have the resume. I mean, he was a top 10 pick, but I think the freaking Eagles would take Brandon Ayuk over Devontae Smith. So
right.
if the Eagles were eager to pay Devontae Smith $25 million a year after 3 years, what are the 49ers? What is their reservation? It seems like they should be offering 25 right now,
yeah.
maybe more. And if that still doesn't persuade Brandon Ayuk, then maybe you should trade him. Like, at a certain point, maybe Brandon Ayuk is asking for too much money and doesn't want to be here. But I don't know if that's the case.
But, you know, the thing about it is it's not even really going to hurt the 49ers salary cap for 2 years. So you could sign Brandon Ayuk, you can keep him for two more years. He'll still probably be in his prime and turn him and trade him at that time if they wanted to. But the longer they wait.
He's with Tyreek Hill. They extended him and then traded yeah. him around 28, 29. They did right. that. Yeah.
That's what probably what they should do. So, like, worrying about the numbers right now is kind of stupid when it's like a million or two, 3 million. Who cares? Because in 3 years, that's going to be a bargain when they actually go to trade him. I just think it doesn't make a lot of sense. I still don't understand it. I would love somebody to explain why they approach things. I don't know if they've been asked that before. You're in the press room all the time. Are they ever asked, why do you guys wait? Because the starting point, the negotiation point could have been $23 million, but now it's $25 million. That should be the starting point because that's what Devontae Smith got. And I don't think anyone could say Devontae Smith is better than Brandon Ayuk. So now that's the floor and everything just elevates. I just don't get it. They got to have some kind of reason, some kind of explanation. Maybe it's because they want to see what happens throughout the draft. I don't know what their explanation is, but I would love to understand it because
it's a good question.
It does.
It's
make
a good
sense.
Question. They should talk about it because it seems like maybe at different positions, their strategy might work. If you have if you're negotiating with a linebacker like Fred Warner, the linebacker market isn't crazy,
right?
It's not going to get reset every month with these crazy monopoly money contracts. Wide receivers are a whole lot different. Like yeah. these wide receivers are getting paid crazy, stupid, crazy money. Yeah. And the longer you wait, it seems like the more the market inflates.
Right.
You could even say it's a bubble, but it like these guys are getting paid maybe more than they could ever justify.
Right.
So if you want to be in market, if you want to do these negotiations, then it seems like your options are to do what Philly did, get it done, right. or trade the guy. dragging it out doesn't necessarily help you. I think it helps Brandon.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. if you're an NFL team possibly considering trading for Brandon Ayuk, I mean, you got to be thinking kind of what the Niners should be thinking at some price point, right? Where it's smarter just to draft a guy on a rookie contract than it would be to pay $27 million for Brandon Ayuk. So I don't even know if there's going to be a trade partner that's tempting enough for the 49ers to move off of BA. I think it's inevitable that BA is going to stay with this team. So let's just get it done already. I just don't understand it, man. It doesn't make
it's just interesting sense. Because with Kittle, they could sort of lean on him. He's a tight end. Tight ends don't get paid a ton of money. Yeah. Debo kind of screwed himself by calling himself a wide back. I feel like the Niners kind of used that against him.
Yeah.
But Ayuk, he's just a wide receiver. He put up the most efficient season in the league last year. And you look at guys who are clearly not as good as him, mm-hmm. getting paid presumably more than what the Niners are offering Ayuk. It's it kind of looks like then it's like from Ayuk's perspective and his agent, like, look, if you want an elite wide receiver, it's what it costs.
Right.
You have to decide, do you want an elite wide receiver or not? Right. And you got to make that decision right now because Ayuk isn't cutting you any breaks. He remembers the things that Kyle Shanahan said to him when he was in the doghouse. No breaks.
The house is on the line. You got to bet the house. What happens with Brandon Ayuk, man? Is he traded or not?
Yeah, I think he's traded.
You do? Yeah, I would say I would say no. I think he stays. I think he stays. Because
I'm not excited about betting the house.
Yeah. it's a little dangerous.
A little dangerous.
Yeah, but I mean, I think he stays, man. I think because of the reasons we said, like if they extend Brandon Ayuk, this year becomes cheaper. Next year becomes cheaper. And then after that, they start paying for it. They could trade him after next year. And I think they probably, if you're looking at the situation long term, they're not going to have Debo in 3 years. They're not. So they have to have one of these guys, you would imagine, unless they're planning on resetting with both of them. I think they look at Brandon Ayuk as this guy could be the future for our team. Let's get him in contract. I think they're just BSing with this negotiation stuff. And I think he ends up signing like Debo, Bosa, all those guys did towards the end of the, you know.
If Ayuk just doesn't want to be here and isn't willing to budge, how many guys do the Niners keep on their team like that? I mean, Debo said he didn't want to be here, but he budged. And he always said, like, Kyle's like, okay, yeah, I'm friends with Debo. I'll work this out. I don't think it's going to work like that with Brandon Ayuk. So I think what could happen is the Niners could be taking calls. They could have an idea of what the three or four best offers out there would be. You know, they're probably not going to get a top 15 pick for Ayuk the way they did for Buckner. So maybe they'll let the draft play out, see who's available. And then when those picks are available, see if the wide receivers they want are there. And then maybe they can make the trade at that point. But it doesn't seem like to make a lot of sense to do it now.
So you think 10 days left with Brandon Ayuk officially on the
49ers? I'm trying to give away this Brandon Ayuk signed jersey right now because I don't know.
Yeah. All right. We'll see, man. I think he sticks around, man. That's my bet, my guess. But we'll see.
All right.
I wouldn't be surprised. Okay. Well,
I hope you're right. Ray Valencia says, love you guys. That's it.
Thank you, buddy.
Love you too, buddy. Matt says, unfollowing social is standard operating procedure. Seems like the kind of way to request a trade without requesting a trade.
Matt's name is killing me.
I know. I just went with the first name there. Brother Bob.
Yeah.
Said Daps, Iggy, and Ryan OG have a $50 million wide receiver room. Eagles have a $50 million wide receiver room, and they don't want to pass the ball, which is amazing.
Yeah.
<Nope. laughs> They might want to work on that. Okay. Draft.
Mm-hmm.
Round one.
Yeah.
All offseason, they're talking offensive tackle. Now, locally, the trendy pick, if you know the Niners pick, is wide receiver. Mm. Starting to hear Matt Maiocco, Matt Barrows talk about why it's not out of the realm of possibility for the Niners to draft a wide receiver in round one. What do you think?
Nah. I mean, look, Matt Maiocco's talking about it, there's got to be some substance there to it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love Matt Maiocco, but he's damn near a 49er at this point, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so if and that does lead me to believe that you may be right, because to me, you don't draft a wide receiver with B.A. and Debo on your team and Juwan Jennings. I don't see that. Not in round one. They're going to draft a wide receiver, I would say, sometime within the first four rounds. But in round one, the only way you do that to me is if you move off of Brandon Ayuk. If you move off of Brandon Ayuk, you can get an offensive lineman with whatever pick you trade for, top 20 somewhere, and then you get your wide receiver with that 31 pick because there's a lot of guys there available. So if Matt Maioka's talking about it, where there's smoke, there's fire, usually with Matt Maioka, except for the Sam Darnold thing. Outside of that, there's usually fire with that smoke. So it could be a trade is coming. That could be what it is, because I don't see if they don't trade him, I don't see how they do that. I don't see why they would do that. I don't think
that's right. Like, sure, you could trade Debo next year and Juwan Jennings going to be a free agent next year, but you're really going to spend your first round pick on a player who would be fourth on the depth chart for a year and it's in a season where you really think you should win the Super Bowl. I don't see it, but let's look at it this way. Let's say the 49ers' best offer for Ayuk is from Washington, mm-hmm. and it's the 2 second round picks, 36 and 40. Be a nice trade haul for Brandon Ayuk. What the Niners could do is have it in their back pocket, get to 31, pick the wide receiver they want, or wait and make sure that whichever wide receiver they want is there, pick him, then make the trade.
Yeah, I could see it, man. I could see it being possible. I mean,
because let's say they only want Adonai Mitchell. Of all the wide receivers who could be available at 31, maybe there's one guy that Kyle's like, this is the only one I think is the truth. It's this one. And if he's not there, I'm not making this trade. But if he is, I will. It could be something like that.
So is this a win year? Is this a win now year or not? I think that's my question, because if you move off of your best receiver, the only receiver that can do what Brandon Ayuk does, and bet that some rookie's going to come in and take his place and be able to do what Brandon Ayuk does, is this really a win now season or is it a rebuild season? Because to me, if you move off of Brandon Ayuk and you draft a rookie wide receiver, it's a rebuild season. This isn't a go all in, let's win the Super Bowl type of season without Brandon Ayuk. If you're relying on a rookie to somehow step in and take Brandon Ayuk's place, who wasn't even was in the doghouse his first year. How do we even know this guy's even going to be ready or good? That's a risk. That's a rebuild to me. And I don't know
if
that's
where they're at. I feel it. But look, in Ayuk's first season, he wasn't in the doghouse. Remember, Jimmy got hurt and that season was kind of off the rails, but he played 12 games and averaged 5 catches a game. This last season, he averaged 4.7. It was the second season when he dropped down to 3.3 and the Niners started phasing him out so they could throw passes to Trent Sherfield and Mohamed Sanu, and that was crazy. But this like myth that wide receivers can't play right away for the 49ers, man, Debo was a key part of their run to the Super Bowl in 2019. Right. Ayuk was actually pretty freaking – I mean, he was actually about as productive his rookie year as he was his past year, maybe not as efficient. So, I mean, you're the fourth option in a run first offense. Like Brandon Ayuk said, you don't have a ton of attention. I mean, someone they could get at pick 31 probably be, I mean, Adonai Mitchell is 6'2", runs a 4'3". Man.
Here's the thing. You want to win a Super Bowl, Grant, and you're in charge of this roster. You want to win a Super Bowl this year, right?
Yeah.
You roll with a rookie or Brandon Ayuk?
I mean, I would trade Brandon Ayuk. And I know it seems like it makes the team worse in the short term, but you also have to balance everything else and sacrificing the future to give you one more shot with the team that just lost.
Well, but the question, like,
this team as is, I don't think is winning a Super Bowl anyway.
Okay. Like long term, I think that might be the best decision for this team is to get cheaper and younger. I don't disagree, but if you are saying, if you believe, if you really want to, if you're the GM, if you're John Lynch, Kyle Shanahan, and you really want to win a Super Bowl this year, if that's really how you feel, are you moving on from Brandon Ayuk? I would say no. Now, if it's, hey, let's reset, let's get cheaper, let's get younger, then yeah, that makes sense to me. I wouldn't be mad at it at all. I wouldn't be mad. I don't get mad about what they do if they trade Brandon Ayuk.
Think about it this way. Let's say Kyle was the one that wanted Ayuk 4 years ago. He was like, look, I mean, let's say he had complete conviction about how good Ayuk would be, and he was right. He also drafted Debo Samuel and Juwan Jennings. Let's say Kyle's the one spearheading this, talking to the front office like, guys, we don't need to do this. I'm the one that found Brandon Ayuk. Adonai Mitchell from Texas, I like him even more, or whoever it is. If Kyle was that certain, and our John Lynch, I would defer and say, all right, Kyle, trust you. You picked Brandon Ayuk. This is your offense. You're not going to change it around to justify spending all this money. Like the Dolphins give Tyreek Hill 170 targets a year because they're paying him $30 million a year. I mean, that's Mike McDaniel. He's not stupid. Right. Kyle's not stupid either. He understands what it would take to justify spending that much money on a wide receiver. Maybe he's like, look, It might take Adonai Mitchell a couple of years to reach his full potential, but he's going to be really, really freaking good right away, too. Be interesting to hear what Kyle thinks.
And then are we sleeping on Ronnie Bell and the way they look at Ronnie Bell at all? That's the other thing.
Maybe they
see Ronnie Bell as a capable replacement if the rookie's not ready right away. Maybe that's the case. I don't, but maybe they do.
I liked him a whole lot better as a wide receiver than as a returner. I thought he got open. That's a good point.
Yeah.
He looked good in the preseason. You know,
he was one of the main players outside of Jair Brown. He's probably the rookie that had the most opportunity in year one. So it wouldn't surprise me if that escalated in year two and he got even more opportunity. And so maybe he's kind of the crutch, right? He's the hedge for these guys in this situation. Maybe that has something to do with it.
All right, round two.
Yeah.
What do you think? This is where they go offensive tackle?
So first of all, in round one, about 25%, I do a lot of mock drafts, way too many. I need to do less. But in round one, when I run mock drafts, there's two players that are no-brainer picks for me that drop probably 25% of the time. 25% of the time when I run my mock drafts, one of these two guys are available at 31. And those guys are Jackson Powers, center, and Byron Murphy, defensive tackle. So to me, if either one of those guys drops in round one, that's a no-brainer. You pick those guys because those are both needs and instant difference makers for this team. I think Byron Murphy might be the best D tackle in this draft, might be the best defensive player in this draft. He's really good. Jackson Powers is automatically off top better than Jake Brendel. So if either one of those guys drops, you get them. Instead of, you know, trying to get one of these tackles early, I think that's the way the 49ers go. They're going to go corner, they're going to go safety, they're going to go D tackle or pass rusher at 31 if they stay put and they don't trade Brandon Ayuk. And then John Lynch was just in Washington looking at, what's his name, Troy Putano. I think that's how I say his name. Probably not. Probably horribly wrong right there. And then Rosengarten, right? What's his name?
Roger Rosengarten. Roger
Rosengarten. Double R. Yeah. Rolls yeah. Royce. So
yeah.
I think they really are.
His name is actually John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. I think that's who they want in round two, and they might even have to move up a little bit to get him in round two. Yeah. The other option, I was talking to Croc this morning on my show, is they might trade down and get two picks and approach it that way. But I think I don't think they're there for Troy. The only way they get Troy is if they do trade Brandon Ayuk. Then that becomes a viable option earlier. They're probably really there for Double R, Richie Rich, and I think that's who they draft in the second round. I think that's who they're going to get. He fits their scheme. He's a good run blocker, and he's probably going to be available in that second round.
Yeah, I just don't see the 49ers drafting someone that they're locking into the right tackle spot before round two. I don't think they value that position that much. You could argue that they should, but when they drafted Mike McGlinchey, they definitely thought he was going to be a left tackle after Joe Staley retired, and they were wrong. So if they're taking a right tackle, look at the right tackles they've had here. They're all tall and high cut and lean. Mm-hmm. Guys who can get that reach block, get their head around and run, but they can't drop anchor to save their lives. None of them. They look like big offensive tackles. They look like, like big tight ends, I want to say. Yeah. They look like big tight ends. Cole McKivitz, Mike McGlinchey. That's Rosengarten. He's about 306 pounds. That's about 6 pounds more than Niners would like. I don't see him necessarily drafting a 325-pound right tackle. Like, since when? Have they changed anything about the way they do business? That's not how they do business.
Right. So, and so in round one, the only guys that might be available are Kingsley, who's kind of a project, they say, Jordan Morgan, who may or not be a good fit for the 49ers. So do you draft round one of those offensive tackles that the Niners usually don't even prioritize? They just extended Colton McKivitz. Do you do that with your first pick, or do you draft the best player available? I think they go best player available at round 31, and then they can grab Rosengarten in round two, and then there's hella receivers they can get in round three, four, and five.
That's true. And they've already shown that they would redshirt a second-round offensive lineman. They did it with Banks.
Right. I mean, there's a reason John Lynch flew up to Washington to watch these two players work out and wore Washington gear. He had Washington hat on, like he was decked out in Washington clothing, right? There's a reason he went up there to watch this. It's not, you know, it's 10 days before the draft and he decided to go do that. It's probably not for Troy. Unless they move BA, they're not going to have a chance. I really think you guys should keep an eye on this Rosengarten guy. I think he could be the round two pick for the 49ers.
Invader Niner says Aaron Banks didn't fit the prototype either. I would disagree with that. The left side of their offensive line is way different than the right side of their offensive line. And Laken Tomlinson is 320 plus pounds. Trent Williams is 320 plus pounds. The left side is where they run power and it's where they run the crack tosses. It's like they're not running outside zone to the left as much. It's a different run blocking scheme on the left. And it's more like the point of attack stuff, more like pushing guys off the ball. Whereas the right side is more like outflanking, reaching and running, jet sweeps, outside zone. So to me, that's why the right side's always been so much smaller. Banks is perfect. They drafted him to replace Laken Tomlinson a year before they knew Laken Tomlinson was going to leave. So that's all I would say to that.
Another thing that makes him intriguing is too, is kind of like what you talked about. If they end up trading Brandon Ayuk to Washington and they got those 2 seconds plus their 31, they're going to be able to pick up Rosengarten within there as well. So it's another reason. I mean, he went out to watch this guy 10 days before the draft.
Yeah.
There's a reason they are interested in this dude.
Yeah. I mean, as they should be, he played for Ed McCaffrey. He's been doing the outside zone blocks since high school, and he's currently being mentored and tutored by Joe Staley. Like, what a great fit, obviously.
Right. Yeah.
They just got to make sure he's a good enough athlete.
Worst case scenario, if the 49ers don't do any trades, any moves, and they're round two, whatever, 60, pick what, 63?
Yep.
They're gonna take this guy. I would almost bet money on it.
I think the right tackle is important in this scheme. I mean, yeah, most of their good runs go to the left, but back when McGlinchey and Raheem Mostert was here and Debo was younger, the big runs went to the right. And even when it wasn't McGlinchey, when they had Tom Compton, just a right tackle who could get out and run, the big runs would go to the right. And ever since they lost Tom Compton, they've just been such a left-handed team. So if they could, Roger Rosengarten ran a 4.9, which is, I mean, freaking Trent Williams ran a 4.88. Like, he's the fastest offensive tackle in the draft. I think he could really help the Niners run game. Don't know what he could do as a Niner in pass protection, but frankly, the Niners don't care. So good fit.
There's a possible scenario that unfolds. Like, let's say they do no trading at all, and Jackson Powers Johnson drops to 31. They draft him at 31, and then they get Rosengarten at 63. 49er fans would be ecstatic. I would be, because I value the offensive line. Will the Niners do that? I don't know. Why not? Maybe. It's a possibility. I would be thrilled with it.
Invader 49 says the Niners never have gone BPA in round one. That is true. And that's a big problem. That's a big reason why they've missed so much, is because they reach for need. But this year, do they have like a clear need? I mean, they could use a corner, but they're not going to take one.
There's really no holes. There's no holes.
Maybe linebacker. Maybe.
Yeah, they're probably looking at, they can get by until Greenlaw comes back anyway.
Right.
So
right.
There's really not a gaping hole. Like, we need to find this guy. So they might go best player available. I hope they do, honestly.
Yep. Let's take some supers and then we'll get to the sleeper picks of the day. I'm not reading your name. Says we need to pay our best wide receiver. Dave Barclay says missed the beginning of this too. Come on, Dave.
Get it together.
He started at 11:05 just for you. Brother Bob says BA had the most wide receiver receptions and yards plus blocking.
BA had the most wide receiver receptions
on the team.
On the team.
Yep, that's true. Yep. Ryan OG, exactly. It's about what 2024 goal is re-BA.
Yeah. If you want to win, if this is a, we're going to win the Super Bowl this year, I don't think you can afford to move off of the best receiver in the NFL, one of the top five receivers in the NFL, when it doesn't even cost you. It's going to be cheaper this year, right? If they extend it's cheaper.
They're not going to win the Super Bowl this year. Oh! Did I just say that on the show? Sorry.
I do want to ask
you. They've changed nothing about their team other than a few players on defense. Like, come on.
I do want to ask you about this because I was thinking about it over the weekend, and it's not a topic, so maybe we don't have time. But the 49ers might be as good, if not better, this year, Grant. And I know we don't think that, you know, they might be. right?
Yeah.
They really might be. If you look at what they've done, the only thing that worries me is the Greenlaw injury. But outside of that, they could be the same or better everywhere. And we haven't even gotten to the draft yet. And one of the main reasons is Brock Purdy having a full, healthy offseason. The quarterback position is the most important position. And if Brock Purdy improves, which is completely possible with a full offseason, they actually could get back to the Super Bowl.
The one thing about the Niners, though, they're getting old.
That's true.
Getting old, man. And the guys they brought in this year, like Campbell, Collins, Floyd, are old.
So, that's the reason they have to trade BA, because those guys, you got to do it now.
That's a good point. If Purdy is a franchise quarterback, then his skill should offset a BP trade. A true franchise quarterback, in my opinion, should compensate for tough strategic business decisions. Is he a really
franchise
is he elite
quarterbacks? Yes. I think there's a difference between franchise quarterbacks and elite quarterbacks.
I wouldn't even consider him elite.
Franchise quarterbacks get paid and they probably shouldn't.
Right.
Elite quarterbacks get paid and they probably should. That's the
difference. Well, I'm thinking Brock's in the very good but shouldn't get $60 million a year category. Sorry.
As of right
now, who's more worth the money they're going to be getting? Brandon Ayuk for 27 or Brock Purdy for 55?
Yeah.
Think about that one, 49ers. Dave Barclay, brother Bob, content creator in the house. He killed it on his first show. Complete natural. Now, he had been on the cone phone, which is good training ground. A lot of people come out of the cone phone. It's like the minor leagues of content creation. Jesse.
It is. Coach. I skipped the minor leagues.
You went straight to the majors. It's true.
Yeah.
First round pick. You know, happens. Mike drops with Monza, says, I'd like to see an O-line take in round one. Biggest need is D-tackle, and it's a glaring hole. I expect a D-line in round one. Well, the Niners do go eight deep. Like, they will play at least eight defensive linemen in every game. And so maybe they feel like they like their starters, but their second wave of Gross Matos and Elliott and Givens and Drake Jackson might not be good enough because they'll play all four of those guys at the same time. There will be multiple drives where it's just the backup D lineman. And I don't know if that one's getting it done there. Givens? Yeah. I don't know.
D-tackle is a big need on the 49ers right now. Yeah.
You can see that. Mike drops again. Niners have a glaring need at D-tackle. They cannot stop the run as constructed, and all the threats in the NFC can run the ball.
Yeah, I think I agree. D-tackle is a huge need. I think, I forget the guy's name. He's actually better at stopping the run than Armstead was, which is good.
Elliott.
Yeah, he's better at stopping the run than Armstead is. I think it's a big need. I also think there's some schematic things. After talking to Johnny Dell, he kind of explained how the 49ers, they ran palms more with D'Amico than they did here. And that and missing Hufanga, who's really was a big part of stopping the run, could have contributed to another reason why they want them to stop the run. So hopefully some schematic things could help with that also, not just personnel.
I wonder what it is about palms that he found was effective. Matt says, you say they won't win the Super Bowl before the draft? Yeah, I'm saying it. You know why? Matt, who's their head coach? I forgot. What's his name? What's his name? As long as he's here, I feel confident betting against this team to win it all. Brother Bob, wait, Ryan OG. That O-line is still problematic. And
let me make the case for the Niners real quick on that one.
Please.
Yes. So their offensive line is not going to be great. Right? The left side's probably top five, top 10. From center to the right is probably bottom 10. But here's the thing. This is their second year together, and the cohesion is a big part of offensive line. So are they going to be upper echelon? No, but they could actually be better with the same guys they had last year.
They could. I think that's fair. Sub Dave Barclay, you the next content creator. That's true, Dave. When are you jumping off the porch and getting in the field?
Yeah.
Bob, thanks, Grant, but I had QC to ensure the show was good. Oh, come on. Please. Carry that. All right, so look, NBA playoffs start tomorrow. Play-in game, Warriors, Kings, local. Let's do some sleeper picks, and let's talk about the game. Let's start with the sleeper picks, though.
Get my phone. Mm-hmm.
So, Curry. 28.5 points. So we got Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, pretty much all the players. Chris Paul. Who you like? What are we going with?
Let's start with Curry. What are our options with Curry? We have more
than Curry. We got 28.5 points, 5.5 threes, 34.5 points and assists, 39.5 points, rebounds and assists, and 4.5 rebounds. 10.5 assists. I mean, you got everything, man. 5.5 assists.
All, I'm going to say
3.5
I'm gonna
turnovers.
Say, I would say it's 10.5 assists or 5.5 assists?
5.5.
I don't know, man. I kind of want to go over on the turnovers, to be honest. I love Steph to death, man, but one of the things he bugs me with is the lazy passing.
The turnovers.
Let me look at the turnovers. What's his history on the turnovers? Yeah.
3.5.
Okay, what's the history look like?
I don't know. It's not trying to, hold on. 3.5. They're not trying to show me? Hold on.
They're not trying to show you.
Okay, here we go. He had 7 the last game.
Yeah, but he was under before that.
Yeah.
That's tough, man. I would say over on turnovers for Steph Curry. That's probably what I would pick.
All right, let's just start this off on a hater note. I like that. Over.
And I love
on
Steph.
Turnovers. We got Clay, Draymond, Wiggins, Chris Paul. Who you like?
What's Draymond looking like? What are we talking about? Assists for Draymond Green.
6.5.
What about flagrant fouls? Is that a
I wish.
Yeah. 6.5 assists for Draymond? I'm going above that.
6.5.
Easy. Over.
Easy.
More.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Clay, Wiggins, Chris Paul. One more. And then we'll do a King.
Let's look at Clay, man.
Clay. So we got 19.5 points. He's been hot. Got 25, 27, 32. Threes.
I'm going over on points.
Over on points, straight up over on points. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, let's do a King. One or two. Sabonis, Fox, Barnes, Murray.
Let's do Sabonis, man.
Sabonis.
I'm looking forward to seeing Trace Jackson versus Sabonis.
That'll be fun.
Yeah.
12.5 rebounds, 8.5 assists.
What's he got with blocks?
Huh?
Blocks. What does he have?
Blocks?
Yeah.
Goodness. Half a block.
Yes, over.
Man, he hasn't had a block in a minute.
He's going to get one.
He's going to get one.
He's due.
He's due. Are you want to do one more?
Sure.
Fox, Murray, Fox, Harrison, Barnes, just for old time's sake.
Maybe we can.
Yeah. Nah,
Barnes is so unpredictable. He's so mid. Let's do Fox, man.
28.5 points. This is 6.5 or the double-double.
He's going over points.
Fox. Over?
Yeah.
All right. Let's lock it in.
What do we win?
$10.
$10.
How did Trae Young get in here? Hold on. Get out of here. Hold on. I didn't ask for you. Where did you get in here? Hold on. You're done. Well, that was informative. Okay, there you go. Yeah. More on Draymond, Curry. Okay, I like it. And the more on Curry is just turnovers. Hate. Oh, I got to put more money in? All right, I'll get back to that one. Those are my picks. If you want to do it, use promo code COHN for the deposit match up to $500. Okay. Who do you think is going to win this game? Warriors, Kings.
I mean, I got to be the homer and say the Kings, but honestly, or the Warriors, excuse me, not the Kings. Sorry, not the Kings. The Warriors are going to win this one. I mean, the Warriors have shown that they own the Kings in general. So until that changes of the guard, I'm going to go with the Warriors. Yes, the Kings won a few last year, but the Warriors have always just dominated the Kings in general. If you look at their win-loss record, Patel says it right here. Kings have lost 7 of the last 11 games to end the season. I think the Warriors are going to win. Unsub. Harris unsubbed to me because I'm predicting the Warriors over the Kings. I'm sorry. I live out here. I know a lot of Kings fans, but I got to go with the Warriors, man. They're the veterans. If the Kings knock out the Warriors out of the playoffs, that would be monumentous, and I don't see that happening. They're the Kings.
I've been watching the Warriors most of the season, and it seems like they can beat a team like the Kings. Kings aren't that good. They're a middle-of-the-road team. They have a losing record. They're just not that good. I think the Warriors can handle them. They beat them in the playoffs a couple years ago.
Yeah. Watch.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this. I'm telling you, Trace Jackson Davis is such a big pickup. He might be bigger than Poole ever was, honestly, for a rookie. he is a difference maker. They got an athletic big. He's only, what, 6'9", but he plays big. And Sabonis is going to have – so Draymond usually takes on Sabonis, but Trayce Jackson-Davis can help with that as well. I think Sabonis is going to have a hard time defending Trayce Jackson-Davis. I think he's going to be a difference maker in this game. I'm thrilled to have Trayce Jackson-Davis. He's a player that the Warriors needed for a long time. I think he's going to play a big part in this. And there's no way Curry, Draymond, Clay, and these guys are going to let the Kings in their season. It's over.
I'm a little worried about them playing pods. I want to see what pods is going to be like in an actual playoff game because, no, he's pretty crafty and he can do a lot offensively. He kind of reminds me of like Dante DiVincenzo. He can pass. Yeah. He can shoot a little bit. He kind of knows how to play, but like defensively, kind of small. He doesn't really have length for a wing. And now like Keegan Murray is like 6'7", and he can really shoot. So is he going to get – can he play in this matchup, or is he going to get run off the court?
I think he's going to get less minutes than he did during the season. I think you're going to have more Chris Paul and less Pod. That's what I would expect, hopefully.
Yeah,
I like Pods. I think he's okay. I don't know if I'm sold on him yet, like I am Trayce Jackson-Davis, but he has shown some good things. He can shoot a little bit. He does rebound really well for his size. So there's good things about him, but I think I would just turn his minutes down a little bit in the playoffs, a little bit more Chris Paul, who has experience.
Is Trayce Jackson-Davis their best young player right now? Like, is he going to be their most impactful young guy in the playoffs?
To me, no question. Yeah.
What happened to Kuminga?
Kuminga, he's been injured a lot lately, so we'll see what he's able to do, if he's able to bounce back. But honestly, the Warriors have been one of the hottest teams if you look at them over the last, what,
8-2 or so.
Yeah, they've been balling lately, and that's without Kuminga, to be real.
Okay,
so I don't know.
And so they've found like a new starting lineup that involves Jackson Davis.
Yeah,
and it's allowed them to get Draymond out of the playing center, and so this is a new team they found, a new little 5-man unit.
They've had a lot of success with it. I'm actually, Kuminga's one of the things I'm worried about because they didn't have as much success with Kuminga. He got injured. They started winning a lot of games. So how are they going to insert him back without messing up what they got going?
Well, let me ask you this. As a former coach, former basketball coach, do you think the Warriors should, we just said we'd like a little bit less pods. Should he go to the bench? Should Klay Thompson come back to the starting lineup? Or have they found something with him in the second unit?
I like him in the second unit. You could close with him if he's having a good game, but I wouldn't mess with what's working. Usually one of my motto has always been, if it's not broke, you don't fix it. When it comes to lineups, if it's working, you stay with it. And I think that's what they should do.
And why is this working? Is it because he gets to play against other backups and he gets to be set up by Chris Paul?
There's that. Also, he has a great relationship with Trayce Jackson-Davis, but really what's going on with Klay, to me, what the problem was with Klay, and it was the same problem you had with Jordan Poole. When Jordan Poole and Klay Thompson on the court together with Steph Curry, they're taking shots away from Steph Curry, the best shooter that ever played in the game. I would rather have that in the second unit when you're not taking away from Steph. That was the biggest problem I had with Poole. You got Poole out here trying to take Steph Curry. It's shots, taking away shots from Steph Curry. Yeah. That was a big problem for the Warriors. And Klay Thompson's kind of at that point. Klay Thompson sometimes gets in these zones where he just wants to shoot everything, and sometimes they're bad shot selections. And when you're doing that with Steph Curry on the court, that's a huge mistake. And I think that's the difference right now.
2 years ago, when the Warriors won the championship, Andrew Wiggins was excellent in the playoffs. Excellent. Yeah. I haven't really seen him since. Like, is he still on the team?
So that's one of the reasons why I think the Warriors beat the Kings. And I think they probably get to the first round, maybe second round, but I don't think they're going to go beyond that. And one of the main reasons is because Wiggins is just so unpredictable. He just doesn't give you that same effort. He's not using his athleticism. He's playing kind of like an old man's game at this point. He's just not the same guy he was. If the Warriors want to win a championship this year, I think it's highly unlikely. But if they do, it's because Wiggins all of a sudden becomes the Wiggins of old and plays like he has in previous years. And I think that's one of the big reasons they don't have a chance to. I love the Warriors. They're my team. I don't see them having a chance to win the championship.
What a strange player. I mean, when he wants to play, he's really freaking good. Like, he's a great defender. He's a phenomenal rebounder. And he's like a really good second or third option on your offense. Other times, he's not there.
He's not even there.
He's not even there. So weird. So, dude, it's the playoffs, man. You might want to show up because when you do, you're so good.
Hopefully he does, and maybe that's what it takes, playoffs. But what's really crazy about Wiggins, too, man, is people don't – I don't think everyone realizes how athletic Wiggins is. He's one of the most athletic dudes in the NBA. Like, his vert is ridiculous. He should be using it like he did in the past. He could go dunk on people three or four times a game, and he's just not aggressive like that. And it's just all mental, man. It goes to show you.
This is crazy too. Like on this team, you could put him on Fox. He could defend Fox at the point of attack, keep him in front of him. I mean, that the way Clay used to do 10 years ago.
Right.
Yeah.
If he wants to, like
he wants to.
I don't know what they need to do, but they need to get that guy fired up. And it's like it's hard to see him fired up. Like I barely even seen this guy fired up, even when he was active, and he's just very emotionalist. And I don't know how to pull that out of them, but they got to figure it out if they want any chance of competing in the championship. And I don't think they have a chance this year.
I don't think so either. A key member of their early championships was Andre Iguodala, and it seems like Wiggins is sort of being paid to replicate what Iguodala gave them to a degree, at least on defense. And he can, but he doesn't all the time.
Yeah.
I love that clip of Andre Iguodala like yelling at him. Remember that? Come over here. Get over here. Right. Come on. It's like, yeah, thank you, Andre. That's what they need.
They need to do something. And isn't Andre, I think he's still on the team as a coach, right? Or an advisor of some sort. Maybe they need him on the bench in Wiggins' ear. But they got it. If they want any chance of competing long-term, they have to pull that out of Wiggins.
They're such a strangely constructed team. Like, you have 36-year-old best player and a couple other guys who are in their early 30s, mid-30s. And the supporting cast is a bunch of guys who are like 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. Like, why? I mean, Trayce Jackson-Davis, great, but like, how about someone 30? Because in the past when they were winning, they had guys like Andrew Bogut, Zaza Pachulia, Sean Livingston, Leandro Barbosa, Maurice Spates, like all these guys who just knew who the hell they were and could do that job. The Warriors don't have those guys. They have guys who are figuring out who they are.
Yeah, and credit to, what's his name, Dunleavy? He did a good job. To me, Paz is a good pick. Good, not great. Trayce Jackson-Davis is exactly what they need. So we'll see what they do after this coming season. Again, I don't think they're winning a championship first round, second round at best exit. And then we'll see what they do because there's a lot of questions in the air. Like Klay Thompson is a big question mark after the season. So we'll see, man. But I think they beat these Kings. That much I do think happens.
If they lose to the Kings, that will be a catastrophe.
Blow it up.
Yeah. I'll be here for it.
Yeah.
Norman. Say my name, acting kind of shady.
Oh,
talking about his name. I don't have to. Mike Joss with Monster says, Palms get the safeties more involved in the wide nine. The DTs have more value than the DN. Niners are screwed. Purdy's contract will be a casket. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Monster. Yeah,
Palms, the safeties play like a little inside of the tight ends, and they're more involved in the run game. And D'Amico ran a lot of that, whereas Wilkes really didn't run that at all. He was more concerned about getting beat by receivers on the back end. That was more of his concern versus stopping the run. So I think personnel and those changes will help.
Cool. Kenyon Gims says, missed my buttered biscuits. Haven't gotten to catch alive in a bit. Hope you guys are doing well. Much love.
Yeah, man. Got to butter those biscuits.
You got to butter those biscuits. Lissette Ruiz says, trade LAC Ayuk next year first for SD 5th and 34th, then trade down. I like thinking of the Chargers as San Diego as well. They should still be in San Diego.
I do. I always
say. To your point.
Yeah.
Next year's first. Okay. I think the Chargers would be a great trade destination for Ayuk. Him and Justin Herbert would work. Love y'all, boys. Love you too, man.
Yes, sir. You too, buddy.
Yes. All right, before we go, we need to talk about rat beef because it has gotten so watered down and it is sort of like sports and competition, so we could talk about it.
Yeah.
Where do you want to go with this?
I don't know. So Kendrick, J. Cole, Drake. Let's start with that. Who's your favorite out of those three?
In the sense that I don't listen to Drake or J. Cole, I would say Kendrick because I have a Spotify playlist with at least seven songs. Kendrick Lamar. I think he makes good singles. Some people act like his albums are just incredible. I'm not really into it.
I love Kendrick, man. I think he's the best modern day rapper out. I think he, out of all the modern day rappers, and I don't like a lot of modern day rappers, but I do love Kendrick. I like J. Cole. Yeah. Yeah. He's
pretentious.
He would have been popular 15 years ago. Like he's,
yeah, he would.
He's kind of timeless, right?
Like the backpack rapper who, like, you know, you don't necessarily throw it on at a party, but you're not really supposed to because you're kind of supposed to just like listen and take notes because it's so incredible. It's like,
yeah,
that's pretentious. Yeah. But he does make some good songs, I got to say, and he's very gifted.
I love Kendrick. I think he's extremely talented. He's my favorite out of the three.
Most pretentious rappers of all time. Him, Andre 3000.
Yeah. Love Andre 3000.
I love Andre 3000 too, though. It's cool.
I don't know about the flute thing he just did, but outside of that, his rap stuff.
Kendrick's going to do that in 20 years. Watch. Watch.
He probably will.
Yeah.
And Kendrick referenced Andre 3000. He said a stick, yep. No Andre 3K, which I thought was, he's talking about the flute. But Kendrick, man, and he referenced the click, E-40. No, be legit. He said, click, people clicking up, not be legit, no 40 water. I thought that was great that he referenced them. But to me, Kendrick is better than these dudes. I respect Drake and what he's been able to do from a monetary standpoint, a number standpoint. He makes pop music, if I'm being real. He can definitely rap, but he's a pop star. I saw him on Nickelodeon. He is not what I would consider a rap.
He makes R&B music. He's Canadian. He's automatically disqualified from any rap discussion.
He's on Nickelodeon.
He's half Jewish. He's Canadian. Yeah. No, absolutely not. If Drake could be a rap star, then I could be a rap star. Absolutely not. No, he's a singer. No.
He probably could be Grant.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Maybe next lifetime.
But yeah, so I respect Drake. I like some of his old music, but I don't ever be at that, like in the car, like, let me put that Drake on. Like, no one does that.
Thank you. To me, Drake falls in the same genre of music as like Beyonce, where it's like,
right.
Girls love it, and that's fine.
Right.
I don't have to pretend like I like it. Right. And guys who do, it's like, man, you're trying too hard to get girls like you. Like, you don't actually listen to this on your own. You don't drive around listening to Beyonce or Drake. You don't.
No.
You don't.
No.
So stop pretending like you do.
Right. And then there's J. Cole, who he's
as good. Boring as could be.
He's good, but that's the thing. He has that Drake. He kind of is like a boring, lame, soft.
I'm as passionate about J. Cole as I am about wallpaper. Like, you can see some wallpaper you like and be like, that's nice. I'm going to ignore it. But before I do ignore it, let me spend 4 seconds being like, oh, that's some nice wallpaper. And now I'm not going to think about it ever again. That's how I feel about J. Cole. Just the most generic New York rapper I've ever heard. He's not even from New York. Is he from North Carolina?
North Carolina. Yeah.
Yeah. I think of him as like just.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. He's okay. I mean, he's talented. Hitter. He's got some hits. He does have some lyrics, got some bars, but he's just a very generic laid back delivery, which is also important to me. I think Kendrick has the best of both worlds. He's got amazing lyrics, bars, and his delivery puts him way above these other dudes.
J. Cole's just too regular. I like my rappers to be a little bit larger than life, almost like professional wrestlers. You got to have a good name. You got to have a persona. Like, J. Cole? Okay.
What do you think about him apologizing and to
it was lame. I'm not surprised that he did that. It's like, that's 100% you.
Yeah.
Jay? I mean,
to a degree, I understand like him wanting to protect his energy, but this is rap, man. Like, rap has changed so much, like from when we in the 90s. And
I mean, rap beef culminated in 1996 with like a whole big deal thing, and it kind of like killed West Coast rap. And I mean, people thought it was too violent. Like, rap beef used to be real. It used to be like, oh my God, are there going to be repercussions? Now it just feels like marketing.
And there were repercussions. So in that way, I understand, like, right? Pac's dead, right? A lot of it is probably because of the way he carried himself. But gosh, man, from a fan standpoint, listening to it, you know, obviously I prefer he never died, because I honestly shed tears for Tupac.
96.
I cried when Tupac
Rap beef goes way back. Like, it was like, it started off in New York where it was like rappers from Queens talking about how rappers from the Bronx wore stupid clothes. Like, that's how it started. But then, and like in the late 80s and early 90s, when Ice Cube left NWA, I mean, there was some Ice Cube going at them, NWA going back at Ice Cube, and then Eazy-E and Dr. Dre. I mean, so many incredible songs were made because rappers hated each other. And that's what should happen if there's a good rap beef, like really classic, iconic songs. And that didn't happen this time. It didn't happen. One beef that I never cared for was the Jay-Z Nas beef. I'm just not a fan of either of them. Thought it was boring.
I don't listen to Jay-Z ever, but I like Nas a lot. I like
Nas. I don't listen to Jay-Z ever too. I'm glad we agree on that. And Nas has like 15 or 20 good songs, and they're probably all written by like AZ or freaking someone else.
Honestly, Nas's new album came out. What is he, like 50 damn near? Was one of the best albums in the last 5 years for me from a rap.
He's the most inconsistent rapper of all time. He no one has made more good songs and more bad songs than Nas. Like, he'll make some songs you're like, what the hell was that, Nas? Other ones you're like, no, this is one of the greatest songs of all time. I don't really get him. And then you'll hear him in like interviews, and I'm like, dude, what? How did you write these incredible portraits of queens? You don't make any sense. Sorry, I don't understand Nas at all.
I'm a big Nas guy. Jay-Z, no. I understand Jay-Z's talent, but I don't ever play Jay-Z music.
Boring.
But, yeah, I mean, it's just changed.
Which is kind of why it's fitting that he married Beyonce, because that, you know.
But here's the thing, man. Like, I'm an old head. You're not old. You're kind of a mid head, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're not.
I know my
head.
History though. I know my 80s rap. I know my 90s rap.
You do. Yeah. But even though I love these things because it's what I was brought up on. And sometimes, and this goes with everything, not just rap music. And sometimes I watch this younger generation, the way they're doing things and evolving, and it feels a little softer. But is that really a bad thing?
I mean, no. It's just, to me, I don't like the commercialization of something that was so organic 30 years ago. Like, this all felt like marketing. Maybe it wasn't on Kendrick's part. But when I was a little kid, like, the Loonies pushed Too Short out of Oakland. You got to go to Atlanta now. You're no longer cool here. Like, we are now, it's our city.
Yeah.
You got to go to Atlanta. Like, that's the kind of stuff that happened back 30 something years ago.
Not and that's anymore. What we're accustomed to. Yeah. And that's why people like me, like my wife's like, J. Cole's so soft for that apology. And she's from Long Beach, Corrupt.
That's what's up.
Yeah. That's what she listened to.
Corrupt would play that.
And like, I understand that argument, and I'm an old head, but I also like, it's probably a good thing. Really, for society, that they are a little softer now than they were when we were.
Yeah, but the nature of the rap beefs in the 90s were like, you know, like, if I catch you on the street, it's over. Like, it was just overt threats. What was going on between these three guys was like, I'm a better rapper than you, or you're not that good. And it's like, oh man, I can't believe I said that. I'm a huge fan. It's like, that's shut up.
Yeah,
you're not supposed to like these people, man.
Yeah, but again, I from a rap standpoint, it's definitely softer.
I just think it's like going to watch WrestleMania and watching one of the main guys going for the heavyweight champion of the world break down mid-fight and be like, you know what? I just like this guy too much. He's my friend. Like, shut up. You're ruining the we know it's fake. Can you just keep the mystique going? We know it's fake. Come on. Just hit him in the face with a chair.
Yeah. And I expect Kendrick to come back hard. But, like, you know, I have three boys and they're all, you know, ages 16 to 22.
Yeah.
And I kind of, as a dad, I kind of want them to live in a society where it's not so gangster, to be honest.
I agree.
The way it was in the 90s.
It's
a
fine line with rap beef. We don't want it to spill over into real life. Like, that is scary, right? And super unnecessary. And when it culminates in, like, it's tragic. Yeah. But it doesn't need to go that far. Like, you're allowed to say this rapper is full of shit. And I'm going to put, like, right. Common's first big hit was him going at Ice Cube and being like, this dude's a total fraud. And Ice Cube never responded because Common had him. Yeah. The song is called The Bitch in You by Common. And if you ever thought Common wasn't, I mean, it's a scathing song from one of the most positive rappers of all time. So,
yeah,
I mean, Ice Cube didn't die. Common didn't die, but it's an important song. I mean, that's what rap beef is.
There's a way to do it. I think there's a way to do it.
There's a way to do it.
To turn in it. Yeah, you could have done both. I think J. Cole lost a lot of clout in the rap industry, even in today's culture, where it's not quite as hard as it was when we were growing up. People still don't respect what he did. And I kind of get it, man. I kind of understand why J. Cole that went that route, but I also understand the argument that it's kind of soft, because compared to what we listened to growing up, it is.
Well, to me, like, I totally dismiss Drake. I would put J. Cole in the same boat. Like, I wouldn't totally dismiss him, but he's a pop star. He's a pop guy. And Kendrick really isn't. So they don't want that song. I mean, he's just actually like, he has all kind of, he's good.
The thing he's about like Kendrick too,
really good.
If you went too far with, if Drake or J. Cole went too far with Kendrick, who is from Compton, who grew up with real gangsters in Compton, you wouldn't want to visit LA, right? That's the difference, I think.
Maybe. I hadn't thought of that. Yeah. I just feel like they can't take it to that level. Like, they don't have – they're pop stars, and they don't have like passionate fan bases. Kendrick is looked at as, like, the most impressive lyricist of all time. You can't win that battle. You can't.
Yeah.
You can't. Just bow out. You're going to lose.
Yeah. Agreed.
Because, like, to me, this is where Kendrick should be doing this, because his ability to make songs that are actually good songs that I want to listen to, I don't know. But, like, battles where I'm going to hang on every single word, oh, yeah, I want to hear that. Kind of like Eminem. Yeah. Eminem, did he make good music?
No.
Not really. But if it was, like you know, a battle where you – someone else's beat, like a Mob Deep beat, and he just was like talking shit about someone. Yeah, I'd listen to that for sure.
Yeah. We feel the same way about Eminem. I don't like his music, so to speak. Maybe like 3-4 songs of his music, but his lyrics, he's one of the best.
He didn't really make music.
No.
And his voice, God, he's just yelling. Like, stop. His voice changed so much. When his first album, he had like this fake New York accent, and then it just became progressively more nasally and loud. I can't listen to Eminem. Sorry. I know people like him. My Name Is was a great song. So was Guilty Conscience. You know what? Dr. Dre brought out the best of them.
I Am is the best to me. Best Eminem song is I Am.
That's when he starts getting in super angry emo. I listened to that. I had that album. I'm not going to say I didn't have the first two Eminem albums when I was in middle school. Of course I did. Memorize them. So those didn't age so well. One song by a white rapper that I think is just an absolute classic. It doesn't get enough credit. People act like they don't like it, but everyone likes the song. Ice Ice Baby, Vanilla Ice, one of the greatest rap songs ever. And classic. People make fun of him, but you tell me another person who could rap and dance at the same time that well. I've never seen
him. Guess what?
MC Hammer. Those two.
Guess what about those two guys? MC Hammer, Vanilla Ice. Guess who they both follow on Twitter?
You.
Your boy, yes.
Your boy. Little known fact about Vanilla Ice. A lot of his songs on that debut album produced by Kyrie, who produced Mac Dre, Mac Maul from Vallejo. So I'm not saying they're good songs because Vanilla Ice made one good song. But that's a little known fact about Vanilla Ice.
I rode in Kyrie's Benz. Remember when Ray Love came out?
Yes.
So Ray Love came out. So Kyrie, my good friend Ricky's sister's Ebony Foster, she sang with Tupac that song Pressure. She sang on that album. Remember the guy at a fundraiser for his stroke? Anyways, his sister sang with Tupac, sang with Mac Maul, all those guys. And me and my friend Ricky were walking home, and next thing you know, Kyrie pulls up with his sister. We jump in the back. He gives us all these Ray Love t-shirts and bumper stickers to pass out at school for the Who Can Be Trusted album. Yeah, I remember that. Interesting experience.
I would argue that the combination of Kyrie and Mac Dre is as good or better than any rapper producer combination duo in the history of the game. I would put them up there.
He's good. I think we have a little homerism when it comes to Mac Dre. Mac Dre's in my top 10, but he probably shouldn't be. It's just because I'm from the Solano.
Take that back. Don't say that in public. You're from, what the fuck?
I'm being honest. He is in my top 10.
No, you're not. He is the number one underground rapper of all time. And his impact on current Bay Area rappers is incredible. Neff the Pharaoh.
Everywhere. Yeah. Yeah. I love Mac Dre. Again, he's top.
He's the GOAT.
I listen to him all the time, but I think that a lot of that time is because we're from the Bay. That we think that. I think if you weren't from the Bay and you heard him, you probably wouldn't agree.
But that's on their fault. But I mean, he's not the GOAT because he didn't have the cultural impact that Ice Cube had or Snoop had or Ice-T had. But if you really know ball,
yeah,
I don't see how he's not in your top five. If you really know ball.
Yeah. He's definitely in my top five.
Gotta be.
Listen to him. Top three guys I listen to, rappers.
And he's got such a deep catalog. You can find Mac Dre songs you haven't heard to this day that slap. And you're like, what? How did no one tell me about this Mac Dre song? It's like, well, yeah, he made like 10 a day.
Yeah.
Luis Gonzalez Fernando, longtime fan. First SC much. Shout out.
We haven't heard of Fernando. Personally, I haven't.
Fernando. You got it, Luis. I don't understand First SC much. Talking higher on Vanilla Ice than Nas is wild. Okay, so Nas clearly made a lot of... significantly more good songs than Vanilla Ice. I just wanted to give Vanilla Ice his flowers. He made that one song and he could dance while rapping, which isn't easy to do. It's not easy. You try it. You try it.
Yeah.
I like when you hear about rappers talk about MC Hammer. Everyone's like, don't mess with MC Hammer. That guy was.
I love MC Hammer, dude. I loved him when I was growing up. Yeah, I know. What a dancer. Like, he's like always. He got to a point where he became like corny because he, you know, no one else was doing that. Everything's got a little more gangster and rap.
Right, and he had to drop the MC. He went by Hammer for a while. Yeah.
Yeah. Hammer. Yeah.
Hammer.
Yeah.
When I was 14, I was on the North Oakland Little League All-Star team, the South Oakland Little League All-Star team. And my friend Kevin, shout out Kevin, he would bring a stereo into the dugout. And before, when we would like get up, he would play Oak Town by MC Hammer. Oak Town, what do you know about my city? Oak Town, city of Oak. You know that song? Oh, don't you know? I used to play at Raider games all the time.
I knew all Hammer stuff. I had Hammer pants in sixth grade.
Me too.
Yeah.
I had them in college.
Wow. Yeah.
I got him at a Buffalo exchange. I got him at a Buffalo exchange.
And like when you were like 5 years old, that's probably when you should have had Hammer pants. But instead, you waited until college.
I tried to be as ridiculous as possible in college. I read that book about Game. And they talked about peacocking, like standing out. So I took that real seriously. I had a mohawk, like kind of shaved on the side with like, imagine this, but like a mohawk and a chin strap. And two earrings, both cubic zirconian, as big as possible. I think 13 millimeters.
Classy. You were classy, dude.
You know, girls thought I was mysterious.
I bet. Yeah.
It was just like, I should have just been wearing a whole sign. Like, I'm an asshole. Come eat me.
Yeah.
It worked, though.
Look at you now, sports coach.
Look at me now, so sophisticated, wearing a blazer in my bedroom.
Right.
Aru Illustrious, member for 23 months. Thank you very much. That's our show. 1210 on the West Coast. Ryan, are you done for the day?
I'm done for the day. I had a show with Croc at 9 a.m. I'll be back with Croc or the coach Wednesday, 9 a.m. Subscribe to the channel. You should. You really should.
Curtis Blow started rapping 1978. You lying, young punks. Curtis Blow, huh? He started rapping 1978.
Did we say he didn't? When did we lie?
I didn't say 1978. I always thought it was 79. 78.
I was told it's 79 because I was born in 79 and I thought I was born the same year rap was and the year Joe Montana was drafted to the Niners. So I'm pretty sure it's in 79, but I could be wrong.
I'm not a big fan of Curtis Blow. I feel like a lot of the rappers from the early rappers, their music doesn't really. It's a lot of shouting, a lot of shout rapping, which is fine. But I like Spoonie G. He was making music back then, and he had like a very laid back flow, which doesn't sound dated when you listen to it in retrospect. Like Slick Rick never sounds dated. He was so laid back on the mic. Spoonie G was laid back. A lot of like Run DMC, it sounds very dated. I still like Run DMC, but it's like, it's 1985.
Yeah, Rapper's Delight was good, but let's be honest, the music and the first rap is kind of bad, like comparison. Yeah.
Go check out Spoonie G if you young heads want to know. Free Max B. From your lips to God's ears, man. All right. I'll be back 2:30. Larry Kruger. See you guys then. I enjoyed talking rap. Good show, man.
Thank you, buddy. You too.
People stick around.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.